Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. The fight to end political gerrymandering continues to make slow but steady progress, both at the state and national levels. In Washington, there's hope that the U.S. Supreme Court will soon issue a ruling that will strike down partisan gerrymandering in which legislators draw districts to advantage one party or the other as unconstitutional. Meanwhile, here in North Carolina, there's a growing hope that the General Assembly might actually pass legislation in the foreseeable future to establish a nonpartisan process for drawing electoral maps. Recently, I sat down with one of the leading advocates in our state for this important cause, Jane Pinsky, of the nonprofit and nonpartisan Coalition for Lobbying and Government Reform. Well, Jane, thanks for joining us.
That's a pleasure to be here. I look forward to getting to talk to you.
Well, talk to us about the coalition's work. The coalition's been around for a while now, and you've worked in a variety of areas. Talk to us about what's sort of front and center these days in the work that you're doing.
Well, the coalition's been around for 13 years now,
wow,
which seems amazing. And we started out because there was a scandal.
Right.
There were a couple of scandals with lobbyists and with elected officials. And we certainly have moved forward, but we've also moved on to some other issues like redistricting reform, because we think that if we're going to level the playing field so that all North Carolinians can really be involved, then their vote has to matter, and our vote hasn't mattered in past elections.
There's a lot of similarities between fighting corruption, just out-and-out cash being given to politicians, and fighting corruption in how we draw our legislative districts. I mean, the hard reality is that for a long time in North Carolina, both Democrats and Republicans have been guilty of drawing our maps in such a way that the politicians choose their voters instead of the voters choosing their politicians, right?
That is absolutely true. And certainly I've been in North Carolina a little over 3 decades. And when I first moved here, this was truly a one-party state.
Right.
And the Democrats had no qualm about making sure that it was going to stay a one-party state, at least in the legislature. Unfortunately, when the Republicans took control, they chose to perpetuate that same behavior. I think that we've seen a couple of good signs, however. One is obviously there are some cases before the U.S. Supreme Court that may change things, although I would remind people we've had 45 judicial interventions in North Carolina since about 1980, and we're still fighting many of the same battles. But I do think the fact that both parties bothered to fill every legislative seat this time.
In the primary
in
elections.
The primary elections and in the general. There'll be 170 districts.
Contested
districts, as opposed to last time when there were 43%, almost half, that weren't. Now, whether all those candidates are real candidates or not doesn't matter. At least people can go into a polling place and see two names. On the other hand, you know, we're still battling over legislative and congressional redistricting in court, and we may end up voting in 2020 on districts that are totally different from what we have now. Our big hope is that the legislature starts to get the message that people want their districts to represent who they are. And I think there are a couple of things out of yesterday's election results that might say
that.
You should
say we're recording this on the day after the May primary.
But, for example, the defeat of Justin Burr from Stanley County, who's been around a while, I at least choose to think that that's people saying they didn't like his plan to do partisan gerrymanders of judicial districts, that people think that the district should represent them, and particularly when it comes to the courts. The other thing is that former state senator Robert Rucho, originally from Mecklenburg County, tried to, what Southerners might say, carpetbag.
Right. Move to another county to try and get back in the Senate.
Right. Rent an apartment someplace else. Didn't succeed because I think partially people don't like carpetbaggers in the South, but also because they recognize that he had had a hand in creating some very divisive politics here in the state.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that gerrymandering has been around for a while, but in recent years, it's really been perfected with the advent of modern digital technology when it comes to drawing districts. I mean, there was a day when the Democrats were clearly gerrymandering and lots of literal physical maps were spread on tables and floors all over the legislative building. But now, with a few keystrokes on a computer terminal, you can make, you know, amazingly specific changes to districts. And that's really perpetuated and made this problem even more egregious.
Oh, I think that the technology has opened up a whole new world when it comes to drawing maps. Anybody in your listening audience can go online, take some shareware software called Dave's Redistricting and start drawing maps. And while they don't have all the information that the map drawers may have at the legislature, they can do a pretty good job of drawing maps.
So you've mentioned the fact we've had court case after court case. We're now 8 years past the 2000 census, which was supposed to have set the districts in North Carolina. We've had a court ruling that the districts we've got now are still flawed, but it's too late to change them for the 2018 election. So it's conceivable now we could have different districts in 2020 and then start the whole process over again.
Exactly. There's a case pending before the U.S. Supreme Court about our congressional districts in what is a landmark ruling by a federal court calling these districts truly hyperpartisan, ruling that there is a way to determine what is partisan gerrymandering. And we're hoping that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to agree with the three-judge federal panel in here in North Carolina, and that we will begin to see a national standard for what is just too partisan.
We should say that for traditionally, the federal courts have said you can't gerrymander for racial purposes, to discriminate racially, but it's been okay. It's actually been approved to say that you can gerrymander and redraw districts to get partisan advantage for your party. But now these challenges are bringing it to the U.S. Supreme Court, where they say, wait a minute, this has gone way too far. They're calling on the court to actually establish some standards and say, come on, this is... we can't have this kind of absurd partisan gerrymandering. And there's a case from Wisconsin, the case from North Carolina, and there's some hope perhaps that the U.S. Supreme Court will.
And actually, there's a third case from Maryland, which each case brings a different party into play as to who did the hyper-partisan gerrymandering. I should say that quite a number of years ago, about 20 years ago, Justice Anthony Kennedy said that he knew there was hyperpartisan gerrymandering. He just didn't have a definition for it. I like to say to people it's a little bit like the Supreme Court's definition of obscenity. They know it when they see it. They can't necessarily tell you the words. However, State Representative David Lewis, who was chair of the House Redistricting Committee, gave the court a big opening when he said they drew 10 Republican congressional districts and 3 Democratic congressional districts because he couldn't figure out how to make it 11-2, 12-1, or 13-0, and that he thought Republicans were better at running the state than Democrats. That's a pretty good sign of hyperpartisanship, and we're hoping that the legislature maybe will be a little cowed by the fact that the courts may intervene, and also by the fact that this election may change the makeup of the legislature.
Well, talk to us in our limited time about how does nonpartisan redistricting, which is the solution we keep holding up as the potential answer to this problem, how might that work? We've had some recent progress, you were telling me, in the state of Ohio on this, in this area. Is there a model? Is there a way we can actually envision moving forward in North Carolina towards a nonpartisan, less gerrymandered way of drawing districts?
Well, there are a couple of models. One is the state of Iowa, which since 1980 has drawn districts where the legislature doesn't draw the maps. Staff does. And the legislature can only vote it up or down. They can't amend it so that Aunt Sarah's in their district. So that's one possibility. In Ohio, they have set up a commission that is bipartisan, but unless there is support from the minority party, the districts only hold for 4 years. Hmm. That certainly would be a possibility. It is impossible to take partisanship 100% out.
At least as long as humans are involved.
At least as long as humans are involved. Yeah, if we could hire a computer when artificial intelligence gets a little better. But it is possible if you do not let the map drawers look at any partisan data, including the results from past elections, voter registration, voter turnout, and where incumbents and likely challengers live, that you can draw maps without looking at most partisan factors. And requiring that districts be compact. I mean, you don't want a district like the one the Democrats drew in 1992 that stretched from Durham to Charlotte, the infamous snake.
We're about at the end of our time. I want to get one more question to you, though, and that's about the legislative session that is now commenced here in Raleigh. One of the issues we are always concerned about, and I'm sure your coalition is concerned about, is the issue of sort of transparency in government. We've had a trend in the General Assembly in recent years of cramming more and more substantive laws into a big omnibus budget bill that people have to vote up or down. They can't even amend in many instances. Any progress there on that front, or is that something we're going to have to wait for?
I think that's something we're going to have to keep working on. I mean, ideally, there should be no substance in the budget. It should be numbers. But more importantly, the budget should be available to the legislators from both parties and to the citizens of North Carolina a minimum of 72 hours before there has to be the first floor vote. People should have a chance to ask questions and discuss it. We also
maybe even testify and offer.
Maybe even testify. Yeah, you know, call their legislator and say, "Well, this doesn't make any sense to me. Can you explain it?" So that the legislator can go to one of his colleagues and say, "Well, I didn't even know this was in the budget." The way that we do the budget now is like college students cramming for an exam. They take 10 weeks of study and cram it into, you know, one night, and that's not a good thing. And I say that as somebody who may have occasionally used that technique.
Yeah, we know from experience that's not the way to go.
Right, exactly.
Well, gosh, as you can tell from our conversation, there's a lot of important work that the Coalition for Lobbying and Government Reform is doing. We congratulate you on this work. We look forward to having you on the show again soon, hopefully with some more positive reports on progress that we're making here in North Carolina and around the country.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for making sure people know about these issues.
Up next, we turn our mics over to some of the thousands of teachers who flooded the streets of Raleigh last week. Stay with us.